Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm Tom Gilson, and today we bring you part two of an interview between host Jerry Boyer and scholar John West, author of Darwin Day in America, and the director and writer of the documentary film Revolutionary. Part two of their conversation begins with Boyer asking West about a segment of the film depicting a contemporary German scientist's dramatic conversion from Darwin to design.
There's a fascinating story in Revolutionary Behe about a man named Gunther Beckley, and there is a postscript to the Gunther Beckley story. Can you just give us real quickly the Beckley story in the documentary and then the Beckley story since the documentary?
Sure. So, and just to the overall view, this documentary focuses on Behe. It focuses on how people thought they refuted him and sort of the low point of, say, the Dover intelligent design trial. And then it focused on, well, what's happened since then? It's really the untold story of some of what I've just saying about the actual evidence in the lab and how really they've vindicated Behe's original ideas and how his ideas have ended up really being influential on a lot of other people that you might have never heard of. And so one of those was a very distinguished paleontologist, studies fossils, discovered new species of dragonflies, and among other things. His name is Gunther Beckley. He was a curator at the Stuttgart Museum of Natural History in Stuttgart, Germany, one of the large state museums of natural history in Europe. And he ended up being responsible in 2009 for creating one of the largest museum celebrations of the bicentennial of Darwin's birth and the 150th anniversary of Darwin's On the Origin of Species. And over 100,000 people visited this display. And at that time, he was committed Darwinian. And from part of the display, he decided to come up with a display that would attack all of Darwin's critics.
And so this was Darwin Mecca. This was Darwin Woodstock. Yes. He was putting together the Darwin Woodstock celebration.
Yep. And he thought a fun display that he came up with was, well, let's have a balance, an old fashioned sort of balance where you have two sides on it. And on one side, we'll put Darwin's Origin of Species. And then on the other side, we'll stack all these books by people like Michael Behe and intelligent design proponents, Darwin critics. And the balance will show that Darwin's outweighs them all. That one book outweighs these 20 other books. And he thought this was a great idea, so they did it. But then he thought, well, you know, maybe I should read some of those books that were attacking Darwin just to, see what they say. And he says, says in the film, that was really eye-opening. And he ended up changing his view by reading Darwin, because what he saw, he had in his mind the stereotype of an intelligent design proponent, based off of Wikipedia and all sorts of other places, and what his colleagues said. And then he actually read the books and realized that there were really serious scientific issues here that he had not thought through. And when he tried to think them through and tried to not just the caricature or the straw man version, but the real version of intelligent design, he changed his mind. And it was just – and he does not come from a religious background, although I have to say that since his – coming to the scientific conclusion that there's overwhelming evidence of design, that has ended up putting him on a journey where now he identifies as a Catholic Christian. But that came after the fact. He was actually from a very secular upbringing. He didn't think much about religion. But the science, once he saw that there was so much evidence of design that he couldn't just explain away, that did have repercussions. So, well, what happened afterwards, and really it was happening – after we were shooting, there were some things behind the scenes we couldn't talk about. He was going through hell basically at his museum, because he had decided to come out of the closet to tell about that he believed in intelligent design. And so he was taken off of grants. Museum exhibits that he was designing were taken away from him. They made clear that he had not done any misconduct, but his colleagues basically refused to work with him, and he was told that. And so ultimately he resigned, because it was made clear that his life would not be very fulfilling if he stayed at the museum because no one would work with him. His name would be taken off the grants. And he actually, at one point, a museum exhibit he had designed that was in the pipeline, he was taken off and made to report to someone who had no expertise in that area. Mm. So he resigned, and then now he's actually formally a fellow of Discovery Institute, and we, thanks to our gracious donors, we've been able to fund some new research that he's working on that's actually quite fascinating. But then this year, we have had a whole blow up because his name has been erased from Wikipedia. So he was a very distinguished scientist, helped advise the BBC on documentaries, has a whole lot of professional publications, books, I think published out of one book that co-authored with, I think, Cambridge University Press. I mean, a very distinguished guy. So for years had had an entry on Wikipedia because he's a distinguished scientist. Well, this year,
several species named after him, right?
Yes.
In orders, yep, and classes, yes.
Yes, yeah. All sorts of discoveries. A real expert guy, but then some lowlifes from Wikipedia basically decide, oh, he's too dangerous to allow. I mean, their idea was, well, he's not distinguished, which was nonsense. But really, it's because they thought he was too dangerous to permit. You know, you can't allow someone like this of such scientific accomplishments to actually be written about in Wikipedia because that explodes the myth that there aren't legitimate scientists who think there's evidence of design in nature. So they end up having a debate back and forth and end up erasing his entry after years of having an entry there. And it was very clearly done because of his intelligent design views.
And this was done by paleontologists at Wikipedia?
No, it was done by – well, one of the lead ringleaders was a self-described 23-year-old kid from Switzerland who posted pictures of himself as a 500-year-old wizard. I don't know that he has any professional qualifications.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I got to give him credit. He made a distinguished man's career disappear. So maybe he does have wizardly powers.
Well, that's right.
Is he the one who, probably not, but got the Wikipedia page on intelligent design locked on pseudoscience? The wizards are the ones who have gotten intelligent design labeled as pseudoscience. I noticed that on Wiki. I went after hearing about this controversy. I went to the ID, and it was just right there from the beginning, listed as a pseudoscience. And I tried to edit it, and it was locked.
Yep.
I'd even try to take a pro ID point of view. Just, you know, maybe a compromise word would be a philosophical point of view. You know, rather than scientific point of view or pseudoscientific, philosophical. Nope, nothing. Pseudoscience. There you are, cast down amongst the, you know, the people reading tea leaves and bumps on people's heads and mesmerism. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what's happened. And it seems like there's two issues on Wiki. One is anthropogenic global warming, and the other is ID, where no scientific dissent is allowed at all.
You know, Wikipedia, when I used to be a college professor, I would not allow students to cite it as a source. On some things, it actually is very good, but it's hit or miss. When you get into some culturally controversial issues, it is usually in the thrall of some higher-level editors that are very opinionated and are really using Wikipedia to promote their view, not the original idea of Wikipedia, which was to be a fair arbiter of different views and sort of give objective, neutral descriptions of things. And it's really interesting, and this is the first place I've talked about this because I just learned about it this morning. It turns out that Larry Sanger, who was the co-founder of Wikipedia, but has since become a bit critical of it, just a couple of days ago weighed in a debate on the intelligent design entry, basically calling, he said, you know, he's an agnostic. He thinks intelligent design is wrong, but he thinks that the Wikipedia article on intelligent design is appallingly biased.
Hmm.
And this is from the co-founder of Wikipedia, thinks that the article on intelligent design is appallingly biased. Well, that says something.
It does. One wonders if Jimmy Wales is going to take a close look at this one, right? Because it seems to me that there's real abuse going on here. And Wikipedia's credibility is going to plummet because of the politicization.
Well, in a way, I have to say, I hope it does, because that is probably the only thing that will get someone like Wales to look at it, because I don't think he has the same Larry Sanger has dropped out in disgust. And again, he actually came up with the name Wikipedia. He designed it early on. And he's just disgusted by how he says it's been taken over by trolls, in essence, who have become the editors, that are just using it to push their own views, which was not the mission of Wikipedia and still isn't the stated mission. And frankly, people who've criticized Wikipedia and written to them about the erasing of Gunter Beckley have basically gotten back sort of PR boilerplate. So I don't think in the current hierarchy of Wikipedia, there really is much, in my own read, much desire to have a legitimately neutral or accurate arbiter on things that, you know, some of the Wikipedia editors feel passionately about it. And I think that's really sad.
It would be, you know, one would think that Jimmy Wales, being a libertarian, so already in some sense out of mainstreams, you know, would have more sympathy for other out of mainstream views. But with libertarianism, often, though, also comes a philosophical materialism and atheism and materialism. So it's like, well, yes, we outsiders are okay, but outsiders, you know, no break for them. All right, I want to talk about another project you have kind of in the pipeline, actually being screened now in some places, but in the pipeline in terms of general availability. The Human Zoo. Can you just give us a quick overview of what you've got coming with that film?
Yeah. So this is a little known story for many people, that in the early 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century, indigenous peoples from around the world were put on public display, some at world's fairs, some in one case, a pygmy from Africa, a man was actually put in a zoo cage with chimps and, you know, others. And that was in the Brooklyn Zoo in the heart of New York City, and something that was really quite it was infamous at the time, but has forgotten about. And so why did this happen? And it was not just pushed by, say, carnival, you know, freak shows. This was actually sponsored by many of the leading scientists in America. And so we tell that story and what motivated it, and then also go into some other things like the eugenics movement, where people were thought that they were sort of breeding a superior human race, and why did they think that, and just how linked it was to the scientific establishment of the time, you know, the heads of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I mean, these were not the leading biologists at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford. And so how could people who were so bright go down such a path that was not very good for a variety of reasons, both scientifically, I would argue, but also morally and relating to human dignity? For anyone certainly who believes that humans are created in the image of God, this was a travesty. And then the bright spot, who were the people who were defending the human dignity of these people who were being put on display? It was usually clergy.
Yes.
You know? And so we tell some of that. Yeah, missionary. Well, yeah. That's true. And you know, general ministers and clergy. And so we tell part of that story. And who are the people who were turning a blind eye to it or even facilitating it? Well, it was also not just the scientific community. It was the major media outlets of the time, like the New York Times. Anyone concerned about sort of debate over the news today, I think we'll find some interesting material about the New York Times and how they covered, say, the putting on of this African pygmy, Otabenga, on display in the Bronx Zoo.
I think that most moderns have absolutely no idea whatsoever how utterly interlocked Darwinism and eugenics were, almost from the instant of the publication of Darwin's book. You've got cousins, they're intermarried family-wise, they're intermarried intellectually. Darwin himself was obviously, mentioned, took a white supremacy view in his writings, but didn't talk about eugenics much. I mean, he kept a certain discrete distance from it, but you get 1 degree of separation from Darwin. And from the very beginning, it was used to argue for the superiority of white, not just civilization, but genetics of yep. white intellect over Samoan and black, et cetera. And, you know, it is immediately starts flowing into eugenics, to the eugenics cause. The most wide application of the pure science of Darwinism at the time was a eugenics application. And we don't know – nobody knows that story, and it was universal. And it's – I mean, I've some Darwinists in debates have said, oh, yes, there was some connection. No. These movements were strongly interconnected with one another, and that needs to be told.
It was – you were right. They were strongly interconnected, and you really can't understand what motivated the eugenists if you don't understand the Darwinian background. And so we are going to tell a lot of things that most people don't know about in this documentary, and even people who are well-read on it, we found some interesting cases. And also, again, talking about, in people's own words, what motivated them, because they – were blatant in describing why they were doing what they were doing. And that's the thing. Even some historians today, they gloss over. I mean, I've seen some historians who should know better. Well, you know, we don't quite understand why they were doing this. Well, sure you do. They tell you. Just read their works, as I have. And so.
Yeah. Yes. Very good. I ran across something a few years ago. I was studying the Scopes trial. And I think it's Cornell has all the documents online. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I want to look into this. And I wondered, well, what was John Scopes teaching? And it wasn't Darwin's Origin of Species. So what was he teaching? And they have the image online. It was Hunter's Civic Biology.
Yeah.
Chapter 12, if memory serves me correctly. Civic biology, what's that? Well, it's basically the civic implications of Darwinism. And it's explicitly a white supremacist document. And I think that people maybe don't understand to what degree evangelical Christians of the time were resistant to Darwinism, not just based on the Bible, but based on social justice concerns, because they knew that as rurals, they were the expendable class in the eyes of Western elites. And they saw Darwinism tied up with social Darwinism, tied up with the idea of, you know, deflationary economic policies, the kind of stuff that wipes the farmer out. I mean, they got that they were the weak of the earth, and that this stuff was aimed at them. So they really had a concern about their own survival, a well-grounded concern about their own survival. They knew that the people who were pushing Darwin were also gunning for the less intelligent, the less evolved people who lived in rural America, who it's okay if they died off because they're a lower species of human being in some way.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you were right on that. And then even more so, I mean, not all evangelicals were quite active in politics. I give great credit, even though I'm not Catholic, to the Catholic Church, because many of them also were very strong in pushing back against eugenics. But of course, on the evangelical side, you had William Jennings Bryan, who is most known for the Scopes trial. But if you actually read his speech on that, it is clear that social justice concerns were really a concern for him as to why the eugenics crusade and why Darwinism was so corrosive and so socially problematic.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a story that needs to be told someday too. But you're already telling this story, so put that one later on the to-do list. Just fascinating stuff. So Revolutionary Behe, you can search for that online, and also keep your eyes peeled, folks, for The Human Zoo, which is coming to a theater, or if not a theater, some other venue near you, probably sometime next year. John West from the Discovery Institute, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Jerry, thank you for having me.
That was part two of a conversation between Jerry Boyer and documentary filmmaker John West. You can check out the film they discussed at revolutionarybehe.com. For ID the Future, this is Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back next time.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.